George Alexander Grant set out to be a park ranger, but once he discovered photography and had a horseback riding accident, he dedicated himself to the craft and eventually became the chief photographer for the National Park Service. He was the first ever. That was in 1929, and during his life, he took somewhere between 30 and 40,000 photos for the National Park Service. But unlike landscape photographers such as Ansel Adams, you probably haven't heard of him. Two Atlanta authors are trying to change that. Wren and Helen Davis put together a book of George Grant's photography. I spoke with the pair about landscapes for the people.
In 2006, we were doing research at the National Park Service Historic Photographic Collection in Charlestown, West Virginia, and we had a folder of photographs of men in the CCC, and I looked at this one picture of Jackson Lake at the Grand Teton National Park, and I said, "Wren, I think this might be an Ansel Adams," because like most people, we associated Ansel Adams with the national parks. And we turned the photograph over and we were introduced to George Grant.
And we looked at numerous other photographs with the archivist, all of them this exceptionally high quality, black and white, vivid images, and repeatedly thought, this looks like an Ansel Adams, this looks like an Ansel Adams. But every time we'd turn it over, we would see the name George Grant. And we finally asked the archivist, we said, okay, who is George Grant? And he explained that he was the first staff photographer and then later the first chief photographer of the National Park Service. And we said, okay, how come we've never heard his name? And then he went on to explain further that in his position as a staff photographer, nearly everything he ever had published, the credit line was simply National Park Service. Very rarely was his own name listed. So he worked in the shadow of many of the great photographers of that era, the Ansel Adams, the Edwin Westons, the Elliott Porters, but did not get the recognition that they got, despite the fact that millions of people saw his photographs in books and magazines and newspapers and park materials, museum exhibits. But again, they did not know who he was much beyond the folks in the Park Service itself. He was unknown.
I think about some of the magnificent cathedrals, medieval European structures, the artists and craftsmen that toiled over those structures. And of course, we never know their names. Mm-hmm. But here in the 20th century, there was precedent for artists being credited. Why do you suppose he remained under the radar?
I think in part because he was a fairly self-effacing, humble person, and he loved photographing the parks, and he was not so much self-promoting in that sense. He was delighted to carry out the assignments that the Park Service asked him to carry out, even though it led to a very, I would describe, solitary lifestyle in many ways, because he was in the field for months at a time, traveling from park to park to park. In the book, we cite that we estimate he traveled about 140,000 miles during his Park Service career, much of it in a specially outfitted panel truck that he called the hearse, because literally that's what it was like. And it was his darkroom chemicals, his camera equipment, his provisions, his amping equipment that he had to have, because he would be on the road for weeks going from park to park. And these were dirt roads and gravel roads. So it was a arduous, hard occupation.
And the 140,000 miles you reported on his traveling, that would have had an impact on his personal life. I mean, how could he possibly settle down if he was constantly in motion?
He recognized, I think, early on that his occupation, his passion, was not conducive to a married life, and he made the conscious decision to remain a bachelor for his life, because he was married to his work in many ways.
There is a very dramatic photo in the book of the map, which he outlined all of his various routes.
That was a 1933 gas station map. And he started drawing on it in 33 of all of his travels from 1929 to 1962. But I love the quote that he put on the bottom. It was from Joseph Conrad that said, "Of all the sciences, geography finds its origins in action, and what is more, adventurous action." And his life really was quite an adventure.
Well, how would you describe his subjects?
I think they're exquisite, well-composed images. He did not have the creative freedom that an Ansel Adams had to create fine artwork, although I think many of his works would have been considered fine art. He was very much an assignment photographer. We almost think of him as a commercial or advertising photographer. And if you look at all the major body of his work, it is of beautiful landscapes, but of people in the landscapes, because the focus for his work was to show everyday Americans enjoying their national parks. And this was an initiative of the Roosevelt administration in the 1930s during the New Deal, was to promote visitation of the national parks. So it was very intentional that he was, I won't say instructed, but certainly encouraged to show people enjoying the landscape and to show them in a scale that showed the grandeur of the landscape. The cover of the book is a wonderful photograph from Mount Rainier, and it's a magnificent landscape image in its own right. But when you look in the corner, there are the people at this magnificent pullout looking at this beautiful mountain, standing next to their 1930s automobile. It's a timeless image, and also it captures a moment in time.
It's very heartening to hear that the National Park Service was eager for Grant's work to be celebrated and for his life to be better known. Because today we think about fights and lawsuits over intellectual property, and that just doesn't enter into any of this.
No, we, the people of the United States, own those photographs.
Yes. They're public domain. That's surprising when you look at some of the beauty of these images and realize that they are public domain. They may be hard to get your hands on them because very few of all of the photographs have actually been digitized. They are sitting in manila folders in file cabinets in the back of a storage building.
But we did give to the National Park Service every photograph that we digitized. We gave them a high-resolution image of that photograph, so they do have that in their files, because they have very few staff members left that are able to do this work, and they just can't change these photographs into digital images.
Lack of funding?
Funding.
When we first started working in 2006, there were about 12 full-time employees. Now there's one.
These photos don't give the impression that Grant was constrained by the cameras or lenses or even the printing techniques of the early 20th century. They have a very modern feel.
They were restored and color corrected by the laboratory that did the work, because some of them were very faded, some of them had, you know, stains and things that had to be fixed. So I think George Grant would be pleased with the way they looked. But he was a straight photographer in the sense that he wanted to capture the scene as it appeared to the human eye, not manipulated greatly. We hope it looks modern, but I also think it also captures the technique and the composition and the style of the times in which they were taken. The ones we scanned were principally 5x7 contact prints. He was using a 5x7 field camera. That camera, along with the film holders and the tripod, he would be lugging 30, 40, 50 pounds of equipment into his photographic location. When we think about today, we hike a trail with our cell phone camera or our little digital camera, and it is so vastly different today compared to what the Ansel Adamses and the Westons and the Porters and Grant had to carry with them to be able to produce images. And they were had to be great patience, because the lighting had to be just right. Now, Ansel Adams could spend days and days at a photographic location waiting for the perfect lighting or the perfect cloud cover or whatever it might be. George is moving from place to place. He doesn't have that kind of flexibility in his schedule to wait for perfection, but he did the best he could with the time available to him. And we think he did a remarkable job when we look at the quality of the composition, the quality of the exposure, that he was able to capture very detailed images, edge to edge, sharp. The skies are not washed out. There's depth in the shadows. And he and Ansel Adams were colleagues. They knew each other. We learned from documents. We couldn't find a direct link between the two of them that they worked together, but we do know that they worked for some of the same senior officials in the interpretive and education branch of the National Park Service. And we like to think that they passed on a trail somewhere. We know that George cited Ansel Adams as a character reference when he needed one for a document after World War II, as well as Edward Steichen, who was another renowned photographer of the era. So he traveled in that circle, but he was sort of always, best we can determine, kind of in the background. He was not recognized, as you've pointed out, widely during his lifetime.
His photo of Death Valley is surreal.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many striking images in your collection. I know this is like asking which lung do you prefer, your left or your right, mm-hmm. but are there some photos in particular that stand out for you?
For me, the cover photograph. I mean, when I pulled that image out of the file folder and looked at it, I looked at Helen and I said, if the book ever comes to pass, we already have a sense of what the title should be. This image conveys that message. This is a landscape for the people. This belongs to everyone. And these are people in the scale of the landscape looking at this magnificent site of Mount Rainier. And we said, that captures it all in one image.
I think I have two that might be my favorites. Sand Dunes Near Stovepipe Wells. Mm. That was a photograph that he did enter in a competition. He took it in 1935, and he entered a competition in 1937. It was the New York Explorers Club first photographic competition. There were 300 photographs entered. One was from Ansel Adams, and George Grant won that prize. And then another one that I love so much is Logan Pass at Glacier National Park. It's the dedication to the Going to the Sun Highway. And the scenery is beautiful, but what moves me even more is that there are 4,000 people standing singing America the Beautiful when this photograph was taken. Now, that one gives me shivers every time I see it. That's where I see the beauty, the majesty that we have preserved in our national parks, and how important it is for us in the centennial of the National Park Service year to be celebrating this wonderful gift we have.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.